You're listening to the Advancing Your Photography podcast. I'm your host, Mark Silber. I connect you with remarkable photographers who've mastered their craft, sharing their insight and skills so you can put them right to use. Hello, I am Mark Silber. I am an author and educator here in Carmel, California, just a stone's throw from where two amazing photographers lived, Ansel Adams and Edward Weston. And this show is brought to you by our good friends at Bay Photo Lab. Now, here's the deal. If you ever heard me talk about it, which is often, I'm always recommending that you guys make prints and hang them on the wall or put them somewhere, and Bay Photo Lab will help you. You can get a collage wall. I'm not even sure what that is, but I guess it's these photographs all kind of working together as a collage, 15% off there. That looks pretty cool. Exposure is what I've got behind me here. This is an exposure. Those are actually, you know, photographs here put on, and this is my logo, and that's printed by Bay Photo Lab. And what's cool about it is you can switch those out if you want. You can have one frame and put different photographs in it. Bob Holmes loves those. I think they're awesome. 30% off on exposures. And as always, you're going to get 25% off on your first order. So do what some of the biggest names in photography do. Bob Holmes, Scott Kelby, Bambi Cantrell, to name just a couple here. Order your prints from Bay Photo Lab. They will totally help you out. Okay. We are continuing our series on the decoding of photography. Do you guys ever felt confused about photography? Come on. Look at all these camera choices here. How about that? How many thousands of cameras are lying there? And, you know, that's just one person's collection. Just kidding. Then how about all the millions of books that you could be reading? And what about all the lens choices? That can get all really confusing. I've been confused. So if I've been confused, I'm not saying I'm the greatest expert. I just have put a lot of time into studying photography. And if it seems confusing to me, I bet it's confusing to you. And what if you had a way, just like this girl has, of decoding? This is her magic decoder ring. Decoding this world of photography that has a lot of confusing twists and turns and what lens should I use? Should I use this kind of lighting? Should I use that kind of lighting? How do I set my camera? All right, so let's get into what this decoder ring is all about. There is, and this is in this book, a cycle of photography. A cycle is something that has a beginning, middle, and an end. The sun comes up, midday, it's overhead, it sets, the sun goes down. That's a cycle. And we go through that every day, 24 hours. We have lots of cycles in our life. And photography, if you think about it, it has an exact cycle that you follow. And it took me a long time to figure this out, you guys. This wasn't a finger snap. This wasn't something that happened in 10 minutes. This took many interviews and many changes. At first, I thought there were four steps to the cycle. Then I realized there's actually five. Visualization, which is going to be the topic of our show today. Getting in your mind's eye before you press the shutter. So let's jump in here. First of all, there is a secret. The whole key to a photograph is what? What do you think? A very famous photographer said, his name is Ansel Adams. He said the whole key to a photograph is, I'm not going to reveal it. We'll go to that in a minute. But there's a false belief that photography starts with cameras and confusing knobs and menus. And I'm going to tell you, that's point number two, that's equipment. So that's like trying to get into a house by climbing into the second story window. You can do it, but you may fall on your butt. And it's not an easy way to get in the front door, is it? So wouldn't it be a lot easier to enter the front door through the front door? And it doesn't involve a camera. It involves you and your mind and your ability to see an image. Visualization. Now, before we dive into this, Jared put a poll up on YouTube, which many of you might have answered. And here was the poll. Jared, go over the results here.
Yeah, so we just wanted to know how well you feel you understand visualization and are comfortable with it. And our top result, which 16% of people said, were, I am comfortable with and feel I understand visualization. Then you've got about 40% of people that say they feel they understand visualization, but they're still working on using it. Another 32 that said, I don't feel I understand visualization yet. And then 13% of people who said they're just not familiar with it. So only about 15-16% of people feel confident and comfortable with the idea of visualization, it seems.
We better help you out with that. Okay, so what is visualization? You see me. This is a simulated enactment, really. There's the photograph I wanted to take. I saw it. I visualized it. I'm using my hands. That often helps you, by the way, because it's a frame. Because you can't think in terms of the world. Your vision is like enormously takes in all sorts of stuff, right? And you have a super wide angle lens here. I mean, I can see stuff all the way back here. But a camera, you're dealing with a frame, which is either, usually it's a rectangle, sometimes it's square, but that's where you have to envision what's going to fit into that frame there. So what does this mean? Visualization. I love this quote, visualize this thing that you want, see it, feel it, believe in it. Make your mental blueprint and begin to build. And that wasn't written specifically about photography because visualization fits any creative activity. In fact, it fits every activity. In sports, you've heard of athletes visualizing. We saw the Winter Olympics, and many of these great skiers, for instance, would visualize the course before they started out on it. They knew where they, you know, maybe it was icy there or it was a little flatter over there, and they already had visualized before they even started their run. Golfers do this. They have to visualize when they swing that club, they want it ideally to end up not just on the green, but in the hole. And that's a visualization process. So you can use this in every part of your life, but for sure in photography. And visualization guides the entire cycle of photography. It is defined in the Oxford Dictionary as the action or fact of visualizing, the power or process of forming a mental picture or vision of something not actually present to the sight. And it's a picture thus formed. I gave you the example of the skier visualizing. She actually hasn't gone down and seen that bump yet. She's way up here somewhere, but she's visualized it because she's run the course before. In your photography, you're getting an idea before you even pick up a camera of what it is you want to photograph. Now, I want to just dispel the idea that this somehow slows you down or it's too thought-provoking a process. Listen, if you're taking snapshots, it's done without any thought. That's what a snapshot is. You're just pressing the shutter, ching, ching, ching. You are not even thinking necessarily about where would be the best place to photograph that day. You're just walking down the street, okay, very little control over the photograph. Ansel Adams said the whole key to a photograph is visualization, and that is the difference between photography as an art form and a snapshot. I don't care how long that visualization process takes, or if you did it 2 hours or a month or a year ahead of time, there's always a visualization process that goes along with your photography, always. Even if you say, I'm going to go out today and photograph on the main street of my town or in Yosemite, you're getting a quick visualization right there. Now, if you can expand on that and really explore it, your photography will get better and better and better. And by the way, that can happen in a split second. And it's often happened to me. I look and I go, wow, if I stood over there,
this photograph is going to be 1,000 times better. And then I make my way over to that spot. Bam, that was a visualization that completely changed where I was going to photograph and how I was going to photograph. Maybe I thought, you know, I better just get down low here. That's a visualization. I'm using my mind to direct the shot and the camera and everything else. Okay. You gotta strengthen that. And the when you visualize a shot, one of the things you want to do, and Chase Jarvis said this, is walk around the scene without a camera pressed to your face. Because as soon as you get a camera pressed to your face, you're into the second stage. So don't go there yet. Don't go there yet. Just walk around, get an idea of what things look like. Where could the photograph be? My son was working in a startup, and Annie Leibovitz came to photograph the startup. And he said, you know, it's interesting to see that she walked around with no camera for 15, 20, 30 minutes just to get an idea where the shots were before she has assistants to accompany her, before anybody pulled out a camera, a tripod, or whatever she was using, lights. She just gathered information about the shoot and was getting an idea. That's one step of visualization. Then you start to build it. You build the scene. Ah, yes. You know, this would look way better at sunset, or way better, you know, first light, or rarely, it'll look way better in the middle of the day. Sometimes maybe you want some really harsh shadows. But whatever it is, you start to build the scene. And then you visualize it all the way through post. When you get into your processing, you're still carrying along your vision. Or I know that I want this to be a black and white photograph. Well, I don't change any settings in my camera. I'm going to do that only in post, but I'm visualizing it as a black and white photograph. So those are examples of visualization. I hope that Joey L., amazing photographer, and I interviewed him. He told me that really how he learned photography was looking at the works of the master painters and noticing how they framed the photograph, but also their use of lighting. So you can see this looks almost like a painting back here, doesn't it? And his lighting is phenomenal. He carries a portable generator with him and some softboxes and some lighting, LEDs probably now, to augment. So you can see there's pretty good light on this subject here, but it falls off and the background gets darker. But he learned that from looking at the works of the painters. And that's how you strengthen your visualization muscles, as we call it. Go out and look at art, and ideally look at it in a museum. If you can't go to a museum, look at it in a book. If you don't have photography books and you don't have a library where you can check them out, or even a bookstore handy, you can go online, but that's the last choice. It's way better to look at the actual art hanging on the wall or print it in a book, because you're going to be much closer to what that artist really had in mind for you. So when you look at it, take your notebook, which I recommend that you have, and we've got lots of notebooks around here. I use notebooks constantly. This is our actual AYP official notebook. And make notes of what you see in that work of art. How was the subject composed within the frame? You can even draw a sketch. And then you want to look at how were they lit? Where was the light coming from? I showed you Joey L. The light was coming. Obviously, there was light, you know, in the environment, but he had a lighting source in front of the subject as well. You can see that. You can look at it. And that's going to help you tune into light, which is part of capturing, is knowing where the light is coming from. And then where is your eye drawn to? Because that's really important. Like, there's a lot of places your eye could go, but where does that artist pull your eye first to? Where do you enter that painting or photograph? Very important. Take note of that, because you don't want your eye bouncing around all over the place. You want it to be drawn to a certain point. And that's going to be in your notes as well. And then finally, what's your emotional impact? How does it impact you emotionally? What do you feel when you look at that work of art? And when I say work of art, I'm including music, painting, photography, films, sculpture. Any one of those things can inspire you as a photographer. I'm generally thinking of it either as something you hear or you see visually, but it could be writing as well. I've gotten inspired by authors to go out and photograph what they're writing about. So these are really important points, you guys. I'm just going to encourage you right now, you got to practice these things. They don't just jump out at you. You got to put in the hard work and strengthen your visualization muscles. This is an excellent example of Vermeer and his painting of the milkmaid. We go through this exercise. So first of all, how did he frame his subject? Well, you notice it's pretty tight. There's not a lot of excess going on here. He leaves this one little cheese grater, I think it is, over here on the floor. But it's all really about the subject right here and the various things that surround her. The light source is easy. Vermeer used one window, north-facing window. The light is coming in. You'll notice that wherever the window hits, you've got a lit up part of her on this side. It's in shade, which is exactly how that window worked. It's very much like a photograph, isn't it? I mean, the realism of this. And then what's your emotional impact? What do you feel when you look at this? I get a feeling of sort of calmness, like she's just going about her business. Things are arranged in a kind of a nice, even way. She seems to be focused on her job. Who knows? Maybe she's contemplating something else. But she seems to be in the moment there. But I also kind of get the feeling like Mona Lisa, that there's something else maybe going on with this expression. There's a little bit of a mystery. Maybe she's preoccupied. Maybe she's a slightly bit worried about something. So it leaves me asking a question, which is a really powerful tool, because people get drawn into these things where they don't really know the answer. But I recommend you study Vermeer. I recommend you study Rembrandt. I recommend you study Andy Warhol. I recommend that you study a lot of different works of art. And I'm going to show you some of my favorites here. Some of the books that have inspired me are this book called The Family of Man. You can get it on Amazon. I think it's out of print, but it's a phenomenal book, all black and white photographs taken by, I forget the number of photographers, I think it's 500. All around the world, they put these together in 68 countries, as I recall. And it was curated by Edward Steichen, a really fantastic photographer, and there's a prologue by Carl Sandburg, the amazing poet. I really recommend this to you guys because you're going to learn a lot about black and white photography around the world. And this was definitely an inspiration for me as a very, very young photographer. Arnold Newman is one of my favorite photographers. He's the one that really coined this idea of environmental portraiture, which is basically you're photographing somebody in their environment, not in a studio setting. Like, for instance, this is Martha Graham, the famous dancer. She's in a dance studio. Now, I really want to point out the use of the rule of thirds here, right? Notice how he adhered to these rules. Not. This is an important point because there are no rules of thirds or any other rules. There's guidelines. And fortunately, he didn't follow that at all. He has his own way of composing and quite often will put the subject on the far side of the frame. Leaves a lot of space. Leaves a lot of negative space, which really calls attention to that subject. So I recommend this book to you. I've been inspired by it many, many times. This photograph, I just think is phenomenal. Look at how he had the subject hang his glasses off his ear. Now, maybe that's how this subject customarily wore the glasses? I don't know. But I think it's really clever and it draws your eye. So this is Arnold Newman Masterclass. You can also get that on Amazon. Jared, we should probably put links so we get credit for this. One way you can support AYP is buy stuff through our Amazon link. I'm not kidding. This is another one I really love, the Masterworks of Modern Art. And this is from the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And it's all types of art, paintings, photographs. This is Salvador Dali, an amazing photographer, amazing painter. That would be pretty incredible if he were a photographer. Pablo Picasso. You know, I'm equally inspired by painting as I am with photography. Just seeing things, you know, you go through here and you get an idea and you say, you know, that could help me with my photography. Does that make sense, you guys? I'm just giving you three. I got a lot of other books, but we'll put links in the description so you guys can click on it and use our Amazon. It does give us credit. We really appreciate it whenever you do that. So use your notebook. Super important. Don't just leave these thoughts in your head. Write down what you see. Draw sketches, reminders. Evernote is also a useful tool that you can use from a digital standpoint. I will often, Evernote is a free app you can get, and I can take pictures with my iPhone. Like, let's say I'm looking at one of these books and I go, oh, wow, I love this. Snap, and I'll put it in my Evernote collection of visualization. And it's really handy. I often forget to do that, but I have done that many, many times. Or even if you're out walking around in the world and you see something, it's not necessarily a great photograph, but you see something and you go, wow, that's cool. I got to remember that. Snap, save it in your Evernote. It's really handy. Very handy tool. But your notebook is even better because it's a physical thing that you carry around with you. And I really recommend that to you. If you aren't using a notebook, get one right now. So here's my question to you. What inspires you? You can put this in the chat, by the way, guys who are with us. What work of art, what music, what movies have inspired you? Joseph Holmes, who I've interviewed, fantastic landscape photographer, beautiful landscapes. And I asked him who his inspiration was, and it surprised me. You'll never guess. He said the Beatles. The Beatles inspired his landscape photography? He said he went to the very last concert at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. You know, those were terrible concerts. The music was piped through the PA system. Ah, it's, you know, those tinny speakers that they use. Okay, on first base, is it? And then roll, run. You know, really terrible in terms of giving you a great performance, but that's how it was done back then. Nowadays, these guys go on tour and they have, like, you know, the Foo Fighters or something, a wall of speakers. But back then, that's how it was done. But that wasn't what inspired him. It was the energy he could feel coming from these guys, the Beatles, that just blew him away. And he said that energy just propelled him as a photographer. So I don't care where you get inspired. Pick up that inspiration and run with it. But this is really important, training your eye. You can use your fingers just like you see being done here. It helps to do this because it gives you a frame, as I mentioned at the beginning. Don't just look at everything. Well, actually, it goes like this. Before you do any of that, you look around the scene with nothing out there in front of you. Then do this. And then go to your camera. You don't have to necessarily do this before you go to the camera, but when you're out walking around or you're on a subway, or you're waiting in a boring line or something, do this. Look for a photograph. There are photographs everywhere. It's a question of, can you spot them? Can you see them? And the more you do this, the more you train your eye to see photographs, the better you're going to get. Super important. Do that whenever you can. What are some examples of your own visualization? Put those in the comments. Did you have a clear-cut time where you remember, okay, if I see it this way and if I do it this way, that's how it's going to come out? And again, that could be a year before you took the photograph. I visualized photographs in Paris months before I went to Paris, and I made a shot list and went out and captured those photographs. So one of the things I said was, when you go to a place like Paris or any place where there's a lot of photographs already been taken, and, you know, how do you take a photograph of the Eiffel Tower and make it look different than what you've already seen on a postcard? Because if you're just going to take postcard pictures, you might as well just buy a postcard. So you have to think, like, what could I do that could be different about this? Shooting at a low angle up, which is what I did, and making it a black and white. You know, there's things that you can do. But if you take the time to visualize and write shot lists, it'll help you once you get there. So those are just some of the things that you can do. But I'd love to hear your own examples of how you have visualized a photograph, even if it was, you know, in a split second, because visualization can occur absolutely just like that. All right. Here's some exercises that you should do. Find inspirational work and write them in your notebook, just as I covered. Then go out and visualize a photograph and then capture it. And then post your results. You can do that in our AYP club. Tell us the story. What inspired you? And here's the photograph that I took. Show us what you got there, because that'll really help all of us understand. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of our visualization morning here. Okay, and visualization, I hope you see it as a tool that does influence your entire life. You can visualize your career. You can visualize, what do you want to do with this world of photography anyway? Where do you want to go with it? You know, do you want to be a documentary photographer and tell those stories? Do you want to take portraits? Do you want to take sports photographs or children's photographs? I've interviewed every one of these different types of photographers. Doesn't mean you can't also get into other genres, but many photographers have found their niche. You know, they're war photographers. They are travel photographers. They take lots of other types of photographs, but that's their brand. Ansel Adams, what was he known for? He took portraits, and some of them are quite beautiful, but he's known for environmental photographs, landscapes. Annie Leibovitz is known for her celebrity portraiture. You know, she also takes landscapes. So you don't really think of Annie Leibovitz as a landscape photographer, you know? So you develop your brand by visualizing. And that visualization is born out of the same things I've already told you. What inspires you? What gets your juices flowing? What gets you excited when you wake up in the morning that you can't wait to go out and do it? That's what you want to be photographing. That's where you want your visualization to go.
Thanks for joining us today on Advancing Your Photography. If there's anything you wanted to see from today's episode, you can find the video version of this show on our YouTube channel, Advancing Your Photography. You can also find the show notes on our website, silverstudios.com/podcast. Please rate and leave a review, subscribe, and be sure to share with your friends. And until next time, remember to get out and capture your own images of life.